ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायण नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नस्तप्रयासो भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भगवती उत्तमा श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। ब्राह्मणा अब्राह्मणा समादृक् इक्विपोइज्ड शांता पीसफुल दीनानां द पुअर समुपेक्षकः ग्रोसली निग्लेक्टिंग श्रवते डिमिनिशेस। ब्रह्मा स्पिरिचुअल पावर तस्या हिज अपि सर्टेनली भिन्ना बंधा फ्रॉम अ क्रैक्ड पॉट पाया वाटर यथा जस्टिस। Translation interpreted by His Divinity Srila Prabhupada ki. The great sages began to think that although a Brahmana is peaceful and impartial, because he is equal to everyone, it is still not his duty to neglect poor humans. By such neglect, a Brahmana's spiritual power diminishes, just as water kept in a cracked pot leaks out. Brahmanas, the topmost section of human society, are mostly devotees. They are generally unaware of the happenings within the material world because they are always busy in their activities for spiritual advancement. Nonetheless, when there is calamity in human society, they cannot remain impartial. If they do not do something to relieve the distressed conditions of the human society, it is said that due to such neglect, their spiritual knowledge diminishes. Almost all the sages go to the Himalayas for their personal benefit, but Prahlad Maharaj said that he did not want liberation alone. He decided to wait until he was able to deliver the fallen souls of the world. In their elevated condition, the Brahmanas are called Vaishnavas. There are two types of Brahmanas, namely Brahmana Pandita and Brahmana Vaishnava. A qualified Brahmana is naturally very learned, but when his learning is advanced in understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he becomes a Brahmana Vaishnava. Unless one becomes Vaishnava, one's perfection of Brahminical culture is incomplete. The saintly persons considered very wisely that although King Vena was very sinful, he was born in a family descending from Dhruva Maharaj. Therefore, the semen of the family must be protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead Keshava. As such, the sages wanted to take some steps to relieve the situation. For want of a king, everything was disturbed and turned topsy-turvy. The great sages began to The great sages began to think that although a Brahmana is peaceful and impartial, because he The great sages began to think that although a Brahmana is peaceful and impartial, because he is equal to everyone, it is still not his duty to neglect poor humans. By such neglect, a Brahmana's spiritual power diminishes, just as water kept in a cracked pot leaks out. Om Ajnanati Virandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena तस्मै श्री गुरुवे नमः। नमः ॐ विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण प्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी नीति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषा शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यादेशातारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैता गदाधर श्रीवासवी गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामा हरे रामा राम रामा हरे 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 कृष्णा। So this story of King Vena continues. Just to quickly recap, so far what has happened, we are talking about the descendants of Dhruva Maharaj, and one of the descendants of Dhruva Maharaj was King Anga, who was quite disappointed and disheartened because he had a very notorious king, notorious son. In Vena, not being able to tolerate his nonsense any further, and also seeing it as a blessings of the Lord, to put him in this situation whereby he can quickly and immediately detach himself from family life. One night, King Anga left his palace, detached from all material opulence, and went forward for his spiritual advancement. So, who was left at the palace was his notorious son, Anga. Now the sages, seeing that the absence of a king in a society can create political upheaval, decided to throne Vena as the next king, notwithstanding that he was very criminal in nature. They were caught between a rock and a hard place, as we say now, to do or not to do, to appoint him or not to appoint him. So anyway, albeit his notorious behaviors, he was appointed as the king, throned as the king. However, that didn't last long because he was appointed as the king on the back of, not getting into political instability, protection from the outside forces. But as it turned out, that the situation became worse because now the turbulence in the society was from inside. For the protection from outside, a notorious king was appointed, and then the calamity started from inside the society itself, starting from king himself, who was criminal in nature. So he was creating a lot of unrest in the society and people became disturbed. So seeing this, the sages decided to approach King Vena to pacify him, so that he can reduce, if not eradicate, his bad behaviors, and there could be peacefulness in the society. But in response, Vena spoke back very harsh words to them and chastised them, almost to the point that they should be worshipping him. And he banned all spiritual activities in the society. So the sages could not tolerate this anymore and decided to get rid of him by death. They killed him, literally they killed him through their powerful words, not by weapons, because the sages do not take up weapons. So they killed him. Then there is again the absence of another king in the society. So what to do? Now at this point in time, the sages realize something very important, and this is where we are at this juncture, that it is not the duty of the Brahmanas, as we know, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas rule the society, they are the kings, but Brahmanas do not get engaged with too much of political affairs. Their duty, as Prabhupada writes in the purport, is to, Brahmanas by nature are very learned, Prabhupada writes, and their learning culminates into transcendental knowledge, and they become Brahmana Vaishnavas rather than Brahmana Panditas. So the sages are having a contemplation to whether get engaged in restoring the government, or to continue, stay away from this political affairs. So quite interesting, actually. When I read this, what came to my mind was this concept of wrongdoings. Generally, When we think of wrongdoings, what comes to our mind is those things that we do wrong. Correct? Wrongdoings are those things that we do wrong. As simple as that. But, interestingly here, the sages are getting the realization that wrongdoings has got two elements, you know. Those things that we do wrong, certainly. And also those, interestingly, and also those right things that we don't do. So, for example, you know, if there's a robbery going on, for the robber to rob somebody is of course a wrongdoing. But suppose a policeman is passing by and he fails to intervene. The policeman's action of not actioning is also a wrongdoing, you know, and he can be implicated for that. He cannot say that, no, I'm not at fault here because I didn't do anything at all. Well, mate, not doing anything at all is also a wrongdoing. It is his duty to get involved if there is a problem in the society, you know, in this case the robbery going on. So similarly, the sages are deciding, you know, that as much as we should not be involved in political affairs, it is a wrongdoing on our part not to do what is right. And what is right? The poor citizens of the society are suffering because of the rogues and criminals in the society who are now rampant in the absence of a king. It is our duty to get involved. So very practical, you know, application of the Varnashrama's dharma, you know, of the caste system, of the benevolent caste systems that once was there, you know, when things were determined according to our guna and karmas. So, Prabhupada writes about the brahmanas, you know, that there is a brahmana, he said that they are brahmana panditas and brahmana vaishnavas. So, little bit about caste system before we move on. Most of us are familiar with it, so I'll go, you know, super fast on this. The caste system that once was there, you know, in its original form was based on guna and karma. We know that from Bhagavad Gita. Krishna tells Arjuna that Chaturvarnya Maya system guna karma vibhagasha. That this guna and karma divides vibhagasha the social and the spiritual orders of, you know, any society. Based on our guna, which is our quality. And based on our karma, which is our activity. In the modern parlance, as we say, on our attitudes and our aptitudes. We try to find a type of job, you know, where we have got the attitude as well as our aptitude towards that job, you know. We sit for aptitude test, as they say. So things were done according to what we were comfortable with. So for example, in my own case, you know, before coming to Krishna consciousness, you know, I was... I enjoyed public speaking. I would go to seminars, you know, and I would do trainings, presentation in the office. So when I came into Krishna consciousness, then, you know, preaching, you know, giving a lecture became my, you know, natural desire. But if somebody asked me to go on the altar or in the kitchen or inside the kitchen, you know, then I struggle. Because, you know, this pujari kind of activity just doesn't come to me. I really struggle. Similarly for cooking. I'm a bad cook. The only thing I know how to cook is to boil water. That too I sometimes bend if I forget to tell the guest over. So, the Varnashrama system was based on our aptitudes, you know, which we were comfortable with. And the whole purpose of the Varnashrama Dharma was to gradually elevate, you know, a soul to Krishna consciousness, you know, gradual upliftment to Krishna consciousness. So, whatever we worked, you know, was according to our comfortable nature, you know, what we were quite apt at. Now sometimes there is this bewilderment which Arjuna also went through to say to work or not to work. We say Varnashrama Dharma is dovetailing our work for the purpose of gradual advancement of Krishna consciousness. But to work or not to work. When Arjuna tells Krishna, you know, that on one hand you are telling me not to fight, not to work, because work entangles you. On the other hand, you are telling me fight. So why are you giving me this, you know, apparently, you know, contradictory advices? Because if I don't fight, then I won't get any sinful reactions. And you are saying fight, so I'm confused. And at that point, he prays to the Lord, you know, to tell me decisively what is beneficial to me. So, Krishna initially gives Arjuna The knowledge of Karma Yoga, working under Varnashrama Dharma. What it means, what does Karma Yoga mean? Karma Yoga means via Krishna, for our activity that we do, Krishna takes the karma and gives us yoga. Karma Yoga is where Krishna takes our karma and gives us yoga. Karma means in this context, you know, the reactions of the world. So Krishna, when we work for Krishna, Krishna takes the reactions out, so we don't get that reactions, and instead he gives us yoga, and yoga is that connection with the Lord, you know, the soul to the super soul. And when we continue, and this is the gradual development of Krishna consciousness, when we continue to work in Karma Yoga, it eventually culminates into Bhakti Yoga. What is the difference? In Karma Yoga, we work under the Varnashrama Dharma, we work for Krishna. In Bhakti Yoga, we live for Krishna. In Bhakti Yoga, we don't work for Krishna, we live for Krishna. Our entire, you know, thoughts, words and deeds, everything is for Krishna's pleasure. Whereas in Karma Yoga, it could be because I have to work, so I'm working for Krishna. You know? Krishna is not necessarily the only purpose of our work. He is the purpose of our work, but not the only purpose of our work. Whereas in Bhakti Yoga, the only purpose of everything is Krishna, nothing else. So that's the gradual development. Now, this knowledge of, you know, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, Bhakti Yoga and all that, you know, this was, Prabhupada said, you know, that this, Prabhupada writes in his paper, that this was pretty common for a Brahmana to know all this. A Brahmana is a Pandita, you know, very knowledgeable. And the culmination or the perfection of his knowledge is when it dovetails that knowledge into Krishna consciousness, you know, that everything is for Krishna's pleasure. So that at that point the Brahmana becomes a Vaishnava, you know, a Brahmana Vaishnava. So all Vaishnavas are Brahmanas. Let me say this carefully. All Vaishnavas, therefore, must be Brahmanas. But not necessarily all Brahmanas are Vaishnavas. Because a Brahmana can be very knowledgeable, but not a Vaishnava. That's how I understood it. Now, this Brahmana Pandita and a Brahmana Vaishnava, a Brahmana who is very knowledgeable, perfecting his knowledge and becoming Krishna consciousness, and a Brahmana Vaishnava, this we saw quite aptly in Srila Prabhupada, you know, and we see it in many devotees. You know, but Srila Prabhupada showed us how to do it. You know, and therefore, Srila Prabhupada was bestowed with the name Bhakti Vedanta. I see Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Now, what does Bhakti Vedanta mean? Bhakti Vedanta is the perfect synergy of Bhakti and Vedanta. So, if you see here, Bhakti is the devotional service, which is the perfection of knowledge. And Vedanta is the knowledge. Vedanta literally means, you know, the end, the antar of Ved. You know, ant in Sanskrit means the end. So the end of Vedas. And Vedas means knowledge. So of course, you know, literally there is no end of knowledge. But what it means here, you know, that the essence of knowledge. Somebody who has understood the essence of knowledge. So Srila Prabhupada was, he understood the essence of all Vedas. And essence of all Vedas is what? Krishna tells us in 15.15 Bhagavad Gita. Sarvasya chaham hirde sannivisto mata istri nyanam apohanam cha vedascha sarve aham eva vedyo vedantakrit veda vedevascha. No? So the purpose of all Vedas is to know him, to know me, Krishna says. So Bhakti Vedanta, Swami Shala, I see Bhakti Vedanta, somebody who synthesized the knowledge with Bhakti, knowledge with devotion. You know? So Brahmana, Vaishnava. Now then, we have to be careful of the type of knowledge we develop. Because knowledge can be in any nature, modes of material nature. Knowledge in the mode of ignorance will increase ignorance, not knowledge. Knowledge in the mode of ignorance will increase ignorance, not knowledge. Let's take an example. I work for a mining company. So I go under the ground a lot because that's where we mine. No, I'm not a miner, as you know, I'm an accountant in the back office function. But you know, I get to tour the mines a lot, you know, throughout the world actually. So when, you know, a lot of times the mining operations, you know, are called in an open pit and underground mining. So underground mining, you have to go down deep the tunnels, you know, the declines to reach to the ore body, you know, wherever you mine your copper, gold, silver, diamond, etc. So when we go down the tunnel, it becomes darker and darker. So knowledge that takes you down the tunnel will take you more and more into ignorance. There is a famous saying, you know, that there is a light at the end of tunnel. Well, note if the tunnel is going underground. Correct? If you go through Benny Tunnel, then fair enough. Either side you come out, you will see light. But if you are going underground in a tunnel, you know, then there is no light. So actually, you know, the saying should have, the proverb should have been, there is end of the tunnel if it's a horizontal tunnel, not a declining tunnel.
You'll be lost.
You'll be lost. And there is knowledge in the mode of ignorance, you know, you'll be lost forever. And this material knowledge is nothing but like that. Material knowledge leads to what? Material knowledge leads to more materialism. And therefore sufferings and miseries. So Prabhupada said, when we send our kids to school, we send them to slaughterhouse. Why? Why are we sending them to slaughterhouse? It's because they are literally bombarded with material knowledge that will lead more to materialism, more to consumerism. And the end product is just lot of stress. Lot of stress everywhere. For those who get the highest jobs in the profession, they are also stressed. There is no happiness. So, we have to be careful of what type of knowledge we develop. Knowledge in the mode of goodness is enlightenment. Tamsoma Jyotirgamya. What does it actually mean? No? From the tama, from the ignorance to light. No? To Jyotir means light. So from Tamsogamya, no? From the mode of ignorance to mode of goodness. No? That is knowledge of enlightenment. And Srila Prabhupada gave us, thus ends the Bhakti Vedanta purpose of. Why didn't he say thus ends Srila Prabhupada's papers of? Namely, when we write something, you know, we have written it. So thus ends my purpose, you know, you could have written. No. Thus ends Bhakti Vedanta purpose. Why? Because it's the proper integration of Bhakti and Vedanta. Through this knowledge, you will develop Bhakti. Bhakti Vedanta purpose. So this is transcendental knowledge, not material knowledge. Which is uplifting and enlightening. So through this knowledge, we get purified. Through the knowledge of transcendence, we get purified. And with that purification, we can know someone who is all knowledgeable and all pure. You see the connection? Krishna is all knowledgeable and all pure. So we need the transcendental knowledge as the bridge to take us from this darkness of impurity and ignorance. So we need to develop the transcendental knowledge and the transcendental purity to be able to know the somebody who is all knowledgeable and all pure. And that is Krishna. So in this case, Prabhupada again writes, and I'm repeating it, that you know, they are Brahmana Panditas and they are Brahmana Vaishnavas. You know. So to remain at Brahmana Pandita level is not the end of human goal. We have to advance to the level of spiritual perfection, which is Brahmana Vaishnava. Understanding the supreme transcendence. Now, Srila Prabhupada also writes that the sages were very, very impartial. Actually, that's in the translation as well. The great sages began to think that although a Brahmana is peaceful and impartial because he is equal to everyone. When are we impartial? When we are equal to everyone. So the sages were impartial. In other words, they were equipoised. Which means, you know, whatever is happening in the society, they were in one sense aloof to it because it's not their business. Their business is Krishna consciousness, not the material affairs. But having seen the upheaval in the society, they had to get engaged, you know, for the correction of the wrongs. So, I also, you know, frequently get asked this question. Is the Lord partial or is the Lord impartial? A very frequent question that I get asked.
In both.
In his both. What do others think?
Partial and non-partial. Partial because he reciprocates with us, and if we have good desires, then he reciprocates in good way. If we don't have good desires, then he doesn't reciprocate, and we are in trouble, and it looks like we are in his partial.
Yep, nice. So, the way I answer it, which is what Mataji has said as well, rather than worrying about, you know, the paradox whether Krishna is partial or impartial, you know, it becomes more clearer if we think Krishna is reciprocal. Krishna reciprocates. Ya yatha mam prapadyante, we know this. So how does he reciprocate? For those who do not want to approach Krishna, he reciprocates by becoming impartial to them and allow the impartial laws of material nature to intervene in the devotee's life, or not so to intervene, to manage that person's life, not the devotee. Let me say this more clearly. Krishna reciprocates to those who do not want to approach Krishna. Krishna reciprocates by remaining impartial to them, by allowing the impartial laws of material nature to deal with that person's life. On the other hand, those who want to approach Krishna, Krishna shows his partiality or his favors to the devotee by intervening in his life and strengthening his Krishna consciousness. So on one hand, he doesn't intervene because he is impartial and leaves the law of karma to deal with that person. You know, as you do, so shall you reap. On the other hand, when the devotee desires to approach Krishna, he intervenes and takes personal care of the devotee so that he can be gradually uplifted in his sadhana, in his bhakti. So he definitely shows favor. So Krishna is reciprocating. He is a sentient being who reciprocates. You know, he is not, you know, he is not impersonal. I mean, he is impersonal, but he is personal as well. That's our philosophy. So Krishna is the person who reciprocates. He's reciprocal, and he reciprocates according to our desires. So these brahmanas similarly were impartial, but they intervened when it was required to show their favors for the poor, suffering, or the citizens. So Krishna shows favors to his devotees, you know, and he protects what we have, preserves what we have, and he gives what we don't. How do we know that the Lord is actually intervening in our life? Sometimes we feel quite helpless. Even after years of Krishna consciousness, it seems, you know, that, oh my God, this goalpost is forever moving far and far. Initially, we are told, you know, chant 16 rounds and follow 4 regulative principles and you will be the happiest person. And somehow or the other, we start chanting 1 round and then 2 round and then 3 and then 16. And some days 20 rounds as well, you know, when we are over enthusiastic. But as we advance in Krishna consciousness, you know, when we realize our position of how fallen we may be, you know, that goal of Krishna consciousness seems too far out. Oh my God, you know, there's still a lot of work to be done, lot of hard work to be done, you know, to reach Krishna. So how do we know actually that eventually Krishna will take care of us? How do we know that he will eventually know, if he has not already intervened in our life, how do we know that he is one day going to appear, you know, and take us back to Godhead? So is there play going on or is there a flower being passed? Because I'll get distracted otherwise. Pass it nicely. It's coming from, you know, as Adi Purusha Prabhu said one day in his lecture, which I still remember. You know, he said about the, you know, the items coming from the altar. You know, it becomes, a lot of times it may become very mechanical. You know, that, okay, the flower has come, I have smelled, you know, and I passed it on. The water has come and somebody has sprinkled, it has passed on. You know, and what else comes? You know, the arati has come and I have just waved my hand, you know, as if I'm a magician. No? And then the arati has passed on. But what he actually said, how many times we consciously remember that actually this is coming from Vaikuntha Loka. No? From there to here, you know, it's, that is descending from the Vaikuntha planets, no? To us to smell. No? That flower that Krishna has smelled. And sometimes we see, you know, that when we pass on the flowers, no, we just sometimes devotees just throw, you know, yeah, you catch it as if it's a soccer ball, you know. But which actually means what? That we are not conscious that it has come from Vaikuntha planet. Now it has actually been, you know, smelled by Krishna, and now we are getting the benefit of the prasadam. So with that consciousness, you know, the articles coming from the altar should be dealt in that day, you know, I meditated on that. It has been a long time. I don't know if anyone you remember or not, but it has been 2 years or maybe 3 years you said in the lecture, and it just gelled with to respect the articles that come out of the altar. They can purify us. So what was I saying? How can we be confident, you know, that Krishna one day will eventually, you know, intervene, if he has not already intervened in our lives and show us the favor that he is known for, you know? So think of the example of an athlete, and if you can relate to that person, you know, in our devotional series. I don't want you to become athletes. That's not the whole aim of my lecture. Think of an athlete who has got some potential, but he's not confident whether he will get to that highest rank that he wants to. But the coach has got a lot of confidence in him. The coach has got the potency to draw the best out of this athlete who is lacking confidence. So what is actually happening here? The athlete has got the potential and the coach has got the potency. The athlete has got the potential and the coach has got the potency. Similarly, in our lives, on our spiritual journey, on this path of Krishna consciousness, you know, when sometimes we lack that confidence of whether we will make it to that rank of, you know, pure devotee and go back to Godhead or not, then what we can meditate on is that we may not be confident. And the problem with this vision of thinking whether we will make it there or not, you know, the problem arises with this perception is because we are thinking from our point of view. I am here and I need to get there, and it seems like this is too much of a job, and it seems like there is a lot of hard work to be done, and it seems like that I am incapable, it seems like that I am still bombarded with all these impurities, it seems like that I am struggling with my weakness, and I might never get there, you know, and we become lethargic, you know, or disappointed, or dejected. All that is required is for us to change our viewpoint from analyzing the situation from our point of view to Krishna's point of view. That we have the potential that we may not be aware of, but Krishna has the potency. He is all potent. So when somebody has got all the potency, he can turn anything into anything. So he can lift us from where we are to where we should be, or where he wants us to be. Just as the athlete who is lacking confidence, you know, is enthused by the potent coach to bring the best out of his potential. Similarly, Krishna, seeing our sincere endeavor and desire, can lift us from our lack of confidence to the fullest confidence of bringing the best out of our potential. So we have the potential, Krishna has the potency. We should not be proud of our potential, nor should we be underestimating our potential. All we have to do is play the game of life according to the terms of Krishna. If we play the game of our life according to the terms of Krishna, who is the head coach, the supreme coach, he will make sure that we are victorious at the end of the game, he will make sure that we are victorious, that we are Krishna consciousness when it's required, pure Krishna consciousness, to be able to go back to Godhead. So I will summarize. We started with, seeing that how King Vena was very notorious, so he had to be removed. And the sages removed him by killing him. And now the sages are getting involved, analyzing that wrongdoing has got two elements. To do wrong is wrongdoings. Not to do right is also a wrongdoing. So they had to get engaged, although, you know, by their attitude and aptitude, they were more, you know, they were Brahmanas, you know, not Kshatriyas. So, after removing the king, they are now deciding the next course of action, which will unfold later in the chapter. We discussed that how we have to work, you know, according to our attitude and aptitude. And when we work in karma yoga, Krishna takes our karma and gives us yoga. So, he engages us in Krishna consciousness, which will eventually culminate into bhakti yoga. And the difference between karma yoga and bhakti yoga is that in karma yoga, you know, we work for Krishna. In bhakti yoga, we live for Krishna. Once we reach that, once we develop that knowledge, you know, then I discuss that we have to be careful with the type of knowledge that we develop. The perfection of knowledge, Prabhupada writes, is when one becomes a Brahmana Vaishnava. And Prabhupada himself demonstrated this, Because when the name Bhakti Vedanta was bestowed to him, it represents that, you know, he had the topmost Bhakti and he was the topmost Vedanta. Bhakti is the devotional service and Vedanta is the essence of knowledge. So he synthesized both. So then I said, you know, then conversely, knowledge in the mode of ignorance will lead more to ignorance rather than to pure knowledge. So we have to be careful of the knowledge that we cultivate. And Srila Prabhupada said that sending, you know, kids to material education is a slaughterhouse for this particular reason. You know, that we are literally killing their spiritual advancement. So we have to be careful. Of course, you know, in modern times we have to balance the both. So we send them there and then teach them Krishna consciousness offline as well. Lot of kids' activities going in the temple, which is glorious. So then we said, you know, that this question frequently arises whether Krishna is partial or impartial. And the way I try to explain is that Krishna is reciprocal. He reciprocates partially as well as impartially, depending on the desire of the soul. So then, if Krishna intervenes in our life, not if Krishna, given that Krishna intervenes in our life, how do we get the confidence that he is intervening in our life? You know, how do we assess that eventually, you know, we will be all right, notwithstanding, you know, the trials and tribulations that we might be going today? And thereby I give the energy of, you know, an athlete who is lacking confidence, but he is inspired by the, you know, expert and potent coach. So similarly, Krishna is the all potent. You know, he is all potency, and we have got the potential that he has given to us. So rather than focusing on our, you know, a lack of potential and lack of confidence, if we have that faith in Krishna that he will fix us, you know, because we have already taken the steps, then Krishna will reciprocate partially, you know, by favoring us, you know, by preserving what we have and by, you know, giving us what we lack for the purpose of our Krishna consciousness. And at the end, if we just play the game of life according to his terms, then Krishna will make sure that we are victorious in our Krishna consciousness. I will stop here, say tell you. And I'm happy to take questions. Two questions. What is his hand when first? Yes.
Just one, how Krishna reciprocates. It's actually he's reciprocating in a daily basis, every minute, every second, if you notice. Like I think it was last week, I was editing matches kids in the train. Probably going in after hospital to thank the pastor of here. And I was thinking, because Hindu community council and the government based on it, we can distribute only Bhagavad Gita. But I was thinking, Matchless Gift is so good because Bhagavad Gita is very hard to understand. And, you know, like some people, they need small books to understand it easier, to spiritual science and to invoke something in it. If you can't understand something too high, they will say, oh, it's not for me. So I was thinking these books are so small, but I was thinking they don't even, but we are not sponsored small books. And I was thinking maybe I can ask a donation for the small books, someone to give me donations so I can give, so I can give the small books. So I went and I saw a patient, and then I went to see a patient, he's the only Hindu patient. So I went to see the patient was gone, but there were two friends of his, and they said, we just talked about Krishna and you're here. And we started talking about Krishna, they were from Kurukshetra actually, and we really had the Krishna Katha, they were talking, and I was inquiring about the friend and everything. And I gave Bhagavad Gita to one who was more talkative, and I just then left, and I went, and I almost reached the door, and the man said, Mataji, please wait, and he gave me $5, and he said, Mataji, please, this is a donation to give some small books, to give some books to other people. And the other joined as well, and he gave me $5 too, and I was thinking, I just thought I will ask for donations for books, but I didn't even have to ask. You know, when Krishna really reciprocated with whatever I desire, you know, like, It was a really nice day because I felt really, and many other things happened. I could see that how Krishna reciprocates really.
Very nice, Mataji, very nice. So those of you who are, you know, listening one night, you know, Rasa Vilashini Mataji was sharing her experience of, you know, how Krishna reciprocated immediately in her life, you know, when she had a sincere desire of giving Krishna consciousness to others. So there was no question, yeah? There was only comments. Yeah?
No,
okay. So there was no questions there. Okay.
Yes. Thank you for a very inspiring lecture, because by you we say we all will be teaching. spiritual world. That is the end. The way you are telling, by your efforts and Krishna's mercy, and of course Radharani's mercy is most important.
Yeah.
That we all will make our way.
Yeah.
Spiritual world. So I would like to say your realization about what is Krishna consciousness. Basically, how we teach to people who are ignorant what is Krishna.
What is Krishna? So the question is, you know, Mahatma Prabhu was sharing his realizations as well. And then, you know, his question is, what is Krishna consciousness? Krishna consciousness is literally to be conscious of Krishna. That's all. No, we just have to be conscious of Krishna. That means that we have to be aware of Krishna. That means whatever we do, we just see Krishna everywhere. What we do, we live for Krishna. No? So what we do, what we see, what we talk, what we hear, what we eat, everything is for Krishna. Krishna, 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 Krishna. And that becomes Krishna. When we are waiting in the lift, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. When we are waiting at the tram stop, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. When we are eating Mahaprasada Govinda, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. When we are chanting Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. When we are hearing Krishna Katha, what comes out of our lips are Krishna. What comes out of our mouth is Krishna. What goes in our mouth is Krishna. Prasadam goes in, Krishna Katha comes out. That is Krishna consciousness. Philip Prabhu.
I just want to ask, when does Brahmana know where to draw the line between acting, like correcting the situation and not finding faults?
How does a Brahmana know where to draw the line between intervening and finding faults?
Intervening and not intervening.
Where to draw the line? So, see, this is an unusual scenario because there is an absence of a king. Generally, you know, the way the Varna Sharma Dharma is set up for the purpose of ruling a kingdom, there will be a Kshatriya king and a Brahmana sitting, you know, as the head of the society for the purpose of guiding the Kshatriyas to rule the kingdom. So the knowledge comes from the Brahmana, the actions, if you like, and the protection, you know, the destruction and the protection. Because Kshat means what? Kshat means to hurt. So Kshatriya means somebody who protects from hurt, H-U-R-T. So that's a Kshatriya. So Kshatriya's duty is to protect somebody from getting hurt. So that's why they carry the weapons, astras. So Brahmana guides the spiritual knowledge and the Kshatriya acts and rules the kingdom. So generally the Brahmanas will not have to intervene because they will be a Kshatriya king. And if the king, Kshatriya, is of saintly nature, which is Raja Rishi, or, you know, they say Raja means king, Rishi means saintly. So Krishna says, I gave this knowledge to the Raja Rishi, the saintly kings. But when the kings are unsaintly, as is the example with Vena, then somebody has to act now. So whether it will be the society who removes him, political coup, or whether it is the sages who had to remove him because the society was incapable, possibly incapable of removing him given his strength. So then the sages had to remove him, and that's when they intervene. If the king is way too criminal, then the Lord appears to remove him, like Kamsa and Ravan, to be removed by the Lord himself. But somebody has to remove him. But where we are now in this particular context, the kingdom is without a king, and therefore they have to intervene. But otherwise, if there was a king, they might not have intervened. Let me rephrase. They would have intervened through their knowledge, but not with their actions of, you know, getting involved, as we say, getting their hands dirty. But because there is an absence of a king, then they have to step in, literally, you know, to remove him and to re-establish another king. And we'll see before the chapter ends how they, you know, how do they chain another person, you know, from the body of Vena, and then enthrone him as the king, who also happens to be a bad king. And then, you know, a good king finally comes, you know, Maharaj Pritham. Okay? Anything else, or can we stop here? Okay. Prantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki.